get it to Boyd. Boyd gets it to Kyer. Kyer with three to Livingston. Long desperation three. It's good!
Hey 10. GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network present an Atlantic 10 original. The Hey 10 Podcast featuring Petey Buckets and Grant LeBenz.
Tosses it in, and it's over. Davidson is going to the dance. They win the Atlantic 10 Tournament Championship.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Hey 10 Podcast. We have a very special guest with us today, Dr. John Giannini. Dr. G, it's your second time on the podcast, so I believe that means you're an official friend of the pod at this point. But our listeners would love to know how are you doing and how your summer's been.
Well, that's nice of you to say. It's always a pleasure to talk hoops, especially with A10 fans. So I'm an AD now at Rowan University, a Division III school. It's one of the larger Division III schools in terms of enrollment. But I'm telling you, COVID takes every second of the day, and you have to have a plan for everything, including things that you never thought you would have to have a plan for. You have to plan a plan for bathroom occupancy and who's going to be in there, how many people, how are you going to communicate that, and just going into buildings and having traffic signs to minimize people crossing by each other, and again, social distancing in locker rooms and limited numbers of people in the locker room at a time. And that's not even touching how you're going to travel to games or how you're going to check for symptoms and screen people and then test and quarantine and trace. And then there's budget implications that, I mean, we see what Stanford did yesterday, dropping 11 sports. So COVID is literally a 24-hour-a-day topic right now in the sports world at every level.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly where we want to spend our time today. Given your perspective as a current AD and as a former Division I coach, I think there are a lot of different questions around like, first, are we even going to have a season? But we don't necessarily want to get in too much into the doom and gloom right now. What we do want to talk about is just assuming that the season is going to be massively, massively disrupted by COVID. What we're going to have is like guys testing positive throughout the season. Sometimes that's going to be, you know, last minute. It's going to be on game day. They're probably going to be out for a week or two, which means teams are going to be shorthanded, including practices. Just given all of this, I would love to understand your perspective as a former coach about how this is going to impact things like game day preparation, planning, and sort of the grind of the season, and just how you would think about managing that.
Well, I call it coaching the COVID way, and there's no question that people are going to test positive. The critical question is, when someone tests positive, how many close contacts do they have to have that will be have to be quarantined? So I was talking with an A10 coach yesterday about this very topic, and what I would do, certainly in the summer and probably through at least the middle, if not all of September, I would do everything in groups of two. I wouldn't scrimmage. I would have a partner that I would do all my drills with, a partner that I would do all my weight training with, and we're responsible to each other. If one of us ends up getting COVID, well, now the other person's out for at least 14 days. And you know, it's probably likely that I transmitted it to that person since they're my partner. But the goal in doing that is to make sure that if I test positive, I don't have to take the whole team into quarantine with me. Whereas if you're scrimmaging like coaches normally would do for, you know, long periods of day of every day, yeah, one positive test is going to take a team down. So you have to have unbelievable communication with your trainer about what constitutes a close contact. I would really do the more traditional coaching in late September and October. You're used to having injuries and people out then. You're used to high ankle sprains. You're used to concussions. Guys are going hard, and there's a lot of contact. And if you have to shut things down for a week or two or lose some guys during that time, that's actually not unusual. But then once I got into the season, I would do a lot of conditioning, a lot of skill work. I would do a lot of walkthroughs, explaining things, scouting reports, philosophies. I would do a lot of 5-on-0 offense. And at the end of the day, I'd want to work with my trainer so we were on the exact same page about what a close contact means. And the definition of a close contact right now is anyone that you're within 6 feet of for 15 minutes or more. So if you're a close contact that way and you meet that definition, I test positive. Now you're quarantined for 14 days. So what you want to do is get as much work done in practice while not having your whole team defined as being close contacts. And I could give you a handful of examples of coaches in different sports who have done more with less. Sometimes, you know, the battling and the grinding, as you said, and the practice and the competition and the scrimmaging, we believe that's how you sharpen your sword, so to speak. We believe that's how you develop grit and toughness and togetherness and timing. But sometimes you also have injuries, you have burnout, you have fatigue, and there's some awfully successful coaches that have kind of been coaching the COVID way for a while and been very successful. So I think, you know, that's how I would coach. You can't scrimmage for long periods of time because if you do that, you know, one positive test is going to take down a lot of people.
Yeah, Dr. G, I think you made some great points about practice and some of the preparation for the season. I specifically like that idea of the groups of two. I think something like that, you know, assuming we do have a season, is something that would be implemented. And I have to ask you, as a former coach and someone, you know, who knows college hoops inside and out, you know, when we hopefully get beyond this whole practice preparation stage and actually start to look at the season and some of the in-game planning, do you think it will be more difficult for teams to add complexity and nuance to both offensive and defensive sets when you get that sort of in-game coaching and actually have to strategically plan for your next opponent?
Well, that's a great question, and simplicity is going to rule the day. To do complex things, you need lots of repetition, and you need game speed repetition, and I just don't think that's going to be realistic this year. The other thing that COVID has already impacted that affects what you're talking about is summer workouts. So coaches now in the summer are normally allowed 4 hours a week, which if you maximize that and you tell your kids, listen, be warmed up when we come up in the gym. We're not going to spend our part of our 4 hours watching you stretch, and you got to be ready to go. And if you could get in an hour for 4 days a week, you get a lot of teaching done, a lot of culture building and toughness teaching done in the summer. So that's why, you know, teams that are more simple don't like, so some of the more complex teams in this league this year have the benefit of being the most veteran. Teams like Richmond and St. Bonaventure have a lot of complexity, but they have a lot of guys who have been around. But the combination that's going to kill you is if you think you're going to have a young team and have any complexity or sophistication. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and Dr. G, that actually dovetails perfectly into the next question that we lined up here. How much more important than usual is it going to be to return a lot of players, a lot of minutes? I personally, when you sort of like look at the landscape, it seems like teams that are relying on first-year players are just going to be at a massive disadvantage, whether those are freshmen or immediately eligible transfers or grad transfers. It's just tough to see how those guys are going to have any time to acclimate with their new surroundings. And I'm curious if that's a conversation coaches are having and if we should just totally write off expectations for first-year players that otherwise we would expect to contribute.
I wouldn't write them off, but and this is what I could tell you to expect with a team like UMass with a lot of really talented young guys, or VCU with a lot of turnover, Rhode Island with a lot of turnover. Those teams are talented enough to win. Watch for those kind of teams in February and March, because they'll figure it out over time. They won't have it figured out in November, December, January, but they're talented enough that once they get some experience and some reps, that they will be a factor. So I wouldn't write them off long-term at all. But there's no question that because of the lack of summer and the lack of normal practice time, experience is going to be more important than ever. And I actually think COVID could save some teams from themselves. And I think I mentioned what coaches do in the summer now. And I don't know. I know the serious fans are aware of this, but maybe the casual fans aren't. But our summer schedules at LaSalle and in the A-10 are often, at a lot of places, pretty intense. Not all of them, but a lot of places, they're lifting weights in the morning. They go to breakfast. They come back and either have a practice or skill work. They have lunch. Then they will go for a study hall, and then they'll have dinner, and then they'll go for a class, and then sometimes after class, they'll come back and shoot. I mean, it's a heck of a schedule. And the reason I bring that up is I think sometimes in college basketball now, you could be too old. Like, I would be concerned about a team like a Richmond or a St. Louis almost being too experienced in terms of the grind. I think when you go through four summers like that, and when you're doing, when you've been there, seen that, done that, I think you could get a little stale sometimes. I think players make big jumps from freshman to sophomore years. I think junior year, they're excited. I think your senior year, and teams like Richmond, St. Louis, have some really key seniors. But I think sometimes, like, I put it this way, I think those teams not grinding as hard in the summer can keep those guys fresher throughout the season. I think it could make them more excited to come into the season. And I'll share a quick story about that summer dichotomy. So Stevie Donahue coaches now very successfully at Penn. He was at Boston College in the ACC. And Boston College, I mean, he had to really try to move up and pass up a lot of blue blood type programs. And one of his solutions was to really try to outwork people in the summer. And in hindsight, he said we would take a week or two off before school started. No one would be excited to be back. Everything would kind of blur together. And he said, I really like it in the Ivy League because we don't do all the summer stuff. And we come back and we are excited to see each other. And we are mentally fresh. And we haven't been listening to the coaches all summer. And if you look at the Ivy League as a whole, I mean, their top programs are knocking off, you know, great teams, Power 5 teams, A-10 teams all the time. So I think COVID is also going to help these experienced teams, you know, not only having an advantage because these younger teams aren't going to have a summer to learn, but I think it's going to keep the older teams fresh.
Dr. G, great points. I like that you harped on experience because that's, I think, a good lead into our next question. You know, you said experience is more important than ever, and I really think that rings true, especially in a league like the Atlantic 10. You know, a mid-major, you have the senior players that are stepping up. They're kind of taking the leadership role, and it's not like the Power 5 programs where you have five-star freshmen, you know, replacing one another each year. So my question is, you know, assuming some of these teams like Richmond, you know, you have your experienced senior on the roster, he's the guy that you kind of go to and look towards for your offense and to kind of lead the other guys on the floor. You know, how do you adjust when a starter inevitably tests positive for COVID, you know, say the day of a game and he has to be replaced last minute? You know, you talked about UMass, and I think of a guy like Trey Mitchell. You know, you think about Massachusetts next year, how would Massachusetts adjust without, you know, the guy that's clearly their focal point and, you know, the center of both their offense and defense?
That is a great example. And I think Trey Mitchell is Exhibit A. I think Exhibit B next year could be Kellen Grady at Davidson. We're talking about guys who are clearly first team all-conference talents, but we're talking about teams with either limited experience or limited depth. And this is a year where depth is going to be at a premium. And some people might say, well, it's always good to be deeper. And that's not always true. A lot of the research shows that the best teams pretty much play 6-7 guys, and people understand the roles and they're confident and they're not looking over their shoulders, and the best players play the most minutes, and there's a lot of benefits to that. I think this year, a team that goes deeper and plays more people, like traditionally a VCU would, or I think UMass, obviously Trey Mitchell is going to play a lot, but I have seen that program use depth. I think St. Louis this year is going to be one of the deepest A-10 teams I've ever seen. Usually you have guys sitting out on your roster, or you have guys who are pretty much recruited to be good role players or specialists. You know, St. Louis right now has like 12, 13 really good Atlantic 10 players. So I think that, again, if you look at teams like UMass and Davidson who have a clearly best player, losing them would be really, really tough. And if you look at the teams that utilize their depth a little bit more, you know, I think they're going to have more of an advantage than usual. Another team that as we talked earlier and you sent me some sample questions, so GW last year, they're really unique in the way they coach their team. They're big on happiness. They even use the word joy. They're not big on grinding. They want people to have fun playing. I think that could keep them fresh. But the reason I bring that up is they had several games where, like Toro or Offram, some of the guys further down on their depth chart who got irregular minutes, when they got in, they really rose to the occasion. And I think a lot of it is because they didn't feel pressure the way a lot of kids would, like, oh my gosh, this is my chance, I can't make a mistake. So, you know, whether it's quality depth where you can go to those 8, 9, 10, 11 guys, or just the way you coach where you kind of give those 8, 9, 10, 11 guys some looseness and confidence. But either way, numbers 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 are going to have to win some games for you this year. You're not going to be able to do it with 6 or 7.
Yeah, and Dr. G, I think that goes back to a point, and maybe it doesn't, but I kind of wanted to connect these two points. The first time you came on the pod, we were thinking about Richmond being a team that potentially makes the NCAA tournament. And you said something that I thought was really interesting. You said that a team like Richmond would be able to make a deep run because they play a very non-traditional Princeton offense that you don't see a lot of anymore with all the different backdoor cuts. And they just look so much different than every other team that they're incredibly difficult to prepare for on short notice. Are there teams, when we look outside of roster depth, are there teams or systems or coaching styles that might be better adapted to dealing with the inevitable disruption that we're going to see this season?
You know, that's another good question. And as I look at the league, I'm not sure that's going to be as much of a factor because, as I said, the more complex teams are more veteran. And that's just random. That's just by chance it happened that way. And I'm sure that, again, these are accomplished, proven coaches in this league. They're not going to complicate things for a bunch of new guys like we're going to see with, you know, a lot of people in the league. So I think style of play will be consistent. I don't think people are going to have to adapt that much because, like I said, the Richmonds and they and St. Bonaventure's with 1,000 set plays, they have their whole, both of them have their whole starting fives back. In the case of Davidson, Coach McKillop is just such an unbelievable teacher, and they have enough veteran guys that, you know, I think that they'll be clicking. So my concern with them would be, you know, just a little bit more depth.
Yeah, no, it's certainly makes sense. And I guess a follow-up question there is that you've mentioned the mental toll that the grind takes. And I think one of the other just super interesting things that you said on the last podcast and that you alluded to here as well is that being senior laden isn't necessarily a benefit anymore, because it's every single off season, every single season is just such a grind. It can be exhausting by the time you get to the end of that senior year. If you look at a senior laden team like Richmond, is this, they have some advantages because they're returning all their important players, and you know, they can have some complexity there that other teams don't. But is this season going to be even more exhausting potentially? Are they at risk of burning out even harder than some of the other teams?
This earlier, I think that those guys have not been on campus all summer. They haven't been doing that 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. grind. I think COVID is going to help the veteran teams, again, for two reasons. Number one, the less experienced teams are not going to have the summer learning repetitions and opportunities. And the veteran teams that, quite frankly, sometimes as a coach, you think they need it and you want to stay in the routine and you want to work. But some teams don't need that all summer. And I think in Richmond's case, particularly, and I actually, as well as I know Coach Mooney, one of the things I'm not sure is how much they typically do over the summer. But I think they're going to be real fresh. And that's a key from St. Bonaventure's success. You know, like Villanova here is local. They work their butts off in the summer. Temple worked their butts off in the summer. At LaSalle, we felt like we had to work really, really hard in the summer. St. Bonaventure does not. When Phil Martelli was at St. Joe's with his good teams, he did not. I thought those coaches do a really good job of delegating in the summer to their assistants, letting their assistants do a lot of coaching, which keeps their voice fresh, which is good for the assistants, because they want to coach and they want to better themselves, and it strengthens the relationship between your staff and players. But those guys, you know, there's different ways to skin a cat. And again, I think that some of these older teams, and St. Louis would be like that too. Now, Coach Ford, he likes to get after it. He doesn't like to do a lot of, you know, things that aren't competitive and toughness oriented. Like they say, we're a hard hat team. So they like to keep the hard hats on. My personal opinion is those veterans like Goodwin and French and Golden and Nick Sherrard and Osunye and Lofton at St. Bonaventure, I'm not sure they need to, you know, be bumping heads with people and coaches all summer. I think that the COVID situation is going to help the veteran teams for a multitude of reasons.
And Dr. G, last question we have for you. You know, you talked a little bit about the veteran players and how they're going to adapt. Kind of on the flip side of that coin, obviously you're going to have, you know, no instances in the A-10 specifically, but you do have some new coaches coming in, you know, seeing kind of their team for the first time, getting adjusted to the program culture and sort of meeting and getting to work with the veteran players who have been around a program for a while. You know, you could even, you know, think about some coaches in the A-10 who might be going on to their second season that are still kind of developing that, you know, sort of relationship with the guys and figuring out exactly how to coach at that specific program. You know, as a first year or second year head coach, how do you deal with really not getting to sit down face to face with these guys over the summer? And how do you still build in that sort of relationship aspect of coaching?
Yeah, I think look at who had the guys on campus sitting out last year. For example, St. Joe's had Demir Bishop from Xavier, Greg Foster from Gonzaga, Taylor Funk was hurt all last year. So there's three new players that they have this year, but they were there all last year. Now, I think URI, for example, they're going to have an influx of talent, but those guys weren't there last year. So I think you have to look at not just who's new, but who's completely new. Because the guys who are sitting out, like LaSalle had Jack Crawford out and Cliff Moore out. Like, those are two really talented guys, but they were on campus all last year. So, you know, I think that has to weigh into it as well. Yeah, if you just recruited freshmen or these new transfers and you can't be face-to-face with them and you're trying to do it virtually, you're going to be at a big disadvantage. But again, don't write those teams off, because come February, they're going to have a lot of learning under their belt, and they'll be caught up in the curve at that point.
Dr. G, great perspective here. I think those are all the questions that we had prepared for you. Is there anything else that we should be thinking about that perhaps we haven't touched on yet?
Well, here's a fascinating idea, and this is either brilliant or kind of science fiction unrealistic, okay? But 1A10 coach bounced this idea off of me yesterday. Have two bubbles to start the season. When it's semester break and you don't have to be on campus, pick two sites, split the league up, everyone go there, test them, make sure everyone's healthy. Again, have the bubble that the TBT has or what the NBA is talking about, but then play four games a week. Have games at 10, 12, 2, 4, because think of TV programming. There's not games on at 10, 12, 2, and 4 on weekdays in January. I think you could get 8 games in a healthy environment in a couple weeks, in a couple bubbles, and have a TV-friendly event. It's almost like a conference tournament-type thing, but different. I love that idea. I don't know if it's logistically possible. I don't know if it's financially possible. But wouldn't it be fun to, for 14 days, see your favorite teams play 8-10 games right off the bat, and to know that they're starting out in the most healthy, rigorous ways of practicing their protocols, and to maybe get that you know, morning till evening TV coverage. It might be science fiction and unrealistic, but I'm fascinated by it. It's fun to think about, even if you can't do it. But that's the kind of odd year that we're in, and that's how creative I think people are going to have to be, whether it's scheduling or whether it's how you run your practices. Just forget about business as normal this year.
That's, you can sign me the hell up for that. I would love
that.
Heck
yeah, I'm down for that.
Dr. G, thank you so much for the perspective. Awesome having you on as always. Best of luck this offseason. I hope you're able to manage it well.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. All right. Bye-bye.